right. Hey, it's Truth About Marcus, Max and Stacey, Residence 104.4, London. But we're not London. We're back in the States. Yeah.
Oh, you can tell we're in the States because there's sunshine. And we're in a car, as you can probably hear. We're in a car. And there's sunshine. Did I say that?
Yeah, it's sunny. It's going to be a lot sunnier. Yesterday it was a bit cloudy. Today it's going to be sunny now, 5, 6, 7 days. For those of you in the United Kingdom unfamiliar with this concept, it's when there's a big yellow ball in the sky that emits light and heat. Some of you have been overseas to other areas on planet Earth may have experienced this.
So we are in North Carolina, which is, you know, really turning out to be such an important swing state in this most deranged election in history of the United States, modern history, of course. And, you know, by the way, you might hear me screaming a lot because there's all sorts of animals running around the street. There's squirrels hiding their nuts everywhere. They're gathering up their nuts for the winter, even though there's barely a winter here. But anyway, they're gathering nuts. And yesterday, we actually got hit by a deer. A deer ran across a very busy intersection, jumped on top of my car, and then tumbled off, and then got up and ran off. So if you hear a loud bang, that could be what you're hearing, is a deer running across the top of my car. And so swing state. This is a swing state. We are in northern part of North Carolina, which is very liberal relative to the rest of North Carolina. You know, you have Fort Lejeune Marine Base here, you have Fort Bragg, I guess Army, and you have all sorts of military bases here, and in the south part of the state along the South Carolina border. It's very right-wing, but up here near University of North Carolina and Duke University and Chapel Hill, it's all kind of liberal, and they have a Democratic senator, Democratic congressperson. So what I'm saying is that it is quite remarkable to drive around because we've been on the lookout, on the hunt for any signs of any support for either candidate. In particular, you'd expect to see more Hillary signs, but we've seen two in public places, not on anybody's lawn. And in fact, our friend said she was counting intentionally because we mentioned this, and she saw something like 6 Trump yard signs the other direction, so we have to head that way later. But what do you think about this, Max?
Well, I think that bumper stickers are not the medium that one uses to express political views anymore. It's all online, so the bumper is no longer the medium of choice to communicate one's political thoughts. I think that's a big part of it. And but having said that, the only bumper stickers we have seen are for Obama
and Bernie.
And Bernie Sanders. There was a little excitement for Bernie Sanders at one point. And look at the traffic is piled up back there.
I think it's an open house or something.
The farmer's market is about to open up. So, you know, this is a destination. So anyway, Bernie was, you know, then the WikiLeaks Podesta emails came out, and it shows exactly how craven the Clinton camp has been toward Bernie and treating him quite poorly and kowtowing to Wall Street and all these things. I mean, Hillary Clinton has been revealed by the WikiLeaks as being this really corrupt dictator in waiting. And what's remarkable is that she has said publicly and during the debates that you shouldn't believe anything in the WikiLeaks Podesta emails because they were written up by Russia. She blames Russia for spreading lies. Now, of course, that's false. There's nothing to suggest anything in the Podesta emails is false. But the idea of scapegoating people is remarkable. It kind of invalidates the whole World War II experience. I think America and Britain were fighting against the scapegoaters who committed massive war crimes. So their answer in 2016 is to scapegoat, start a war, and presumably continue committing the war crimes that the UK and Britain and the US are committing now in various countries. And I guess no lessons learned. I guess we must never forget. I guess they forgot.
Well, that's the remarkable thing. So you've had 3 presidential election debates and 1 vice presidential debate. And do you know there was something like 170 mentions of Putin and or Russia? That was the number 1 topic in all of the debates. Number one by far, something like 30 times more mentioned than the economy. You know, here's an economy racked with debt, with craziness, with, you know, lower, ever declining wages. And I also think, you know, part of the reason why Russia and Putin was mentioned, it was always brought up by Hillary, and it was in order to distract from asking her any questions about her, what emerged from the Podesta emails, what emerged from her, you know, from her speeches to Goldman Sachs. What emerged was that, despite what she says on the campaign trail, she's actually very fiercely pro fracking. She says she's against it on the campaign trail, but we know she's actually pro it. She's also very fiercely for TPP and TTIP, those two big trade deals, which basically get rid of sovereignty in favor of a special supra sovereignty for corporations. We know all of this now, but she keeps on distracting by this boogeyman. And remember back in 2004, during that campaign, everybody, all the left wing, all the progressives, all the, you know, the Beltway media, who are mostly progressives, they used to mock mercilessly George W. Bush for always saying Al-Qaeda, 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 9-11, 9-11, 9-11, scared, be scared, be scared, be scared, vote for me, and distract from anything else. Well, that's what the Democrats are doing now, so it's truly remarkable.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a hot-button issue. As you mentioned, it was Al-Qaeda, and that Al-Qaeda attacked America on 9-11 that got people to vote against their best interest, that lie. And usually in America, it's guns, gods, and abortion that gets people, you know, distracted and getting them voting against their own interest. In the UK, we had a similar experience with this Brexit vote where the sovereignty and right to control our destiny pot was stirred and got people to vote against their own interest. I saw an interesting statistic this past week that less than one half of 1% of GDP in Britain actually goes to paying the EU fees. And for that, they get an enormous 17% of GDP is trade with EU. So that was sacrificed for the one half of 1% in cost. So that was one of the worst deals ever, I think, so far. Just the tragedy is unfolding now, people realizing it was similar, though. The people are goaded into voting against their own interest for the corporate interest. And in the U.S., it's playing out. The Putin in Russia is being, you know, the villain and trying to get stir the pot. But again, I find it remarkable that this idea that scapegoating people somehow leads to something other than what we saw 60 or 70 years ago, which was quite horrific.
So North Carolina was an early success story for Obamacare. And it had the highest percentage of people sign up for Obamacare policies. As a percentage of the population, it expanded. At least 250,000 people were on the Obamacare policies. At least, because those were the ones not Blue Cross Blue Shield. So November 1st is the beginning of the open season, I guess, on Obamacare. Every November 1st is when you have to sign up for your next year's Obamacare policy. And the theory always is that, you know, this was a marketplace and they would compete for your business. And every year at November 1st, you got to tell your insurance company, if I don't like what you're providing for me, I'm going to sign up for another one for a better price and better coverage. Well, all of the plans, all the health insurers have dropped out of North Carolina except for one, and that is Blue Cross Blue Shield. And they waited until like last week or the week before to even announce that they would stay for the year. And the only reason that they stayed for the year is because United Health and Aetna and others dropped out of the market. So they got to argue that, well, we need our premiums increased even more than what we were expecting. So from November 1st, North Carolinians will find out exactly how much their premiums will rise and what this policy is. But 250,000 people were thrown off their old policies in order to make room for just this one. Blue Cross Blue Shield is the only option. And we'll see how much the prices rise, but I have a feeling, you know, that could sway certainly the last minute vote here in North Carolina away from Hillary Clinton and to Donald Trump, who is promising to end Obamacare. So if people, if these 250,000 voters, you know, are confronted with a huge sticker shock in the next week or 10 days, you know, I think that could have an impact.
Yeah, what did they...
See, Max needs an Obamacare policy.
What did they call it? Single buyer, right? Was the Bernie Sanders talking about essentially Medicare for all?
Single payer.
Single payer. And this referred to the fact that if you had a single operating, single entity, in this case, the government operating in the market, you could get the best possible prices because you're negotiating wholesale prices.
Yeah.
So then they said, no, we need a market. We need competition. So here's some several healthcare providers. They're going to be competing, and therefore the consumer will pay less. Well, they eventually bought each other out. They become a monopoly. So we've gone from single buyer to single seller.
Yes.
Now it's a single seller in the state, which is Blue Cross Blue Shield, and they have no competition, and they are in a monopoly position, and they're going to raise prices to a level that's one could call draconian. And also, if you look at the number of doctors versus administrators in the healthcare business, the number of doctors has grown almost not at all. The number of administrators has increased almost 1,000%. All those administrators are mouths that have to be fed by gouging, price gouging, and we're seeing evidence of it. Now, we knew when we first announced, Obama said that there would be a market for healthcare. We knew immediately what was going to happen because you're giving it essentially to the people who gave us the current rigged stock market, LIBOR market, Forex market, gold and silver market. Every market is rigged. So by putting healthcare into the clutches of more market riggers, you end up predictably with a monopoly position, much higher prices, no competition. This is financial illiteracy. We saw it from Obama during the financial crisis of 08, where he handed the ball to the people who created the crisis, Larry Summers, Timothy Geithner, Ben Bernanke and those folks. Here, he gave the ball to market riggers to create a marketplace for healthcare. It was a complete freaking disaster. So this guy, what he should do when he gets out of the White House, go to business school, learn a little bit about business and markets and try to educate himself, and he'll know why he threw the entire country under the bus. Maybe you'll give him some closure.
Well, actually, the WikiLeaks release of the Podesta emails shows exactly what happened. It wasn't Obama who chose Geithner and Larry Summers and all those other people. It was Michael Froman from Citigroup. And Michael Froman from Citigroup, who is now the U.S. Trade Representative, i.e. he's negotiating TTIP and TPP on our behalf. Well, Michael Froman at that time was at Citigroup, and he sent an email 1 month before the election in 2008, 1 month before it, October 6th, 2008, and he sent an email to John Podesta, who at that time was going to lead Obama's transition team, i.e. he gets to choose the cabinet members, and what the emails show is that Citigroup sent him a list of who other bankers and Citigroup want for their cabinet. And almost every single person was exactly who became Obama's cabinet. So in terms of illiteracy, we don't even know, because all he was told, this is your cabinet, and that's what the cabinet became, and that's who all his advisors, his financial and economic advisors became.
Right, exactly, yeah. They got Citigroup to pick all his advisors. So I guess that's why during the financial crisis of 2008, the insiders had tremendous confidence to buy stocks when they were trading at 80 or 90% down. You know, Citigroup, it got bailed out, Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, Wells Fargo. The media was touting the idea that these companies' stock market is in existential danger. A lot of people sold out. They went to cash, believing that story. And we're not told that from the insiders that the bailout was guaranteed, that all of these banks. So guys like Warren Buffett and others were buying stocks in these companies, and they made 300, 400, 500% of their money in 5 or 6 years. and trading on inside information, concentrating wealth into the oligopoly, America's oligopoly. Again, it's funny to criticize Russian oligopolists when you have in America the rise of this pernicious concentration of oligarchs that are ripping the fabric of society to shreds, destroying the social contract, burning the Constitution, and installing a vicious warmongering dictator in the form of Hillary Clinton on behalf of the bankers.
Well, even Bloomberg News yesterday had a piece about these share buybacks, and they said, you know, they credit share buybacks, you know, the company eating itself, essentially, the company buying its own shares. A lot of it is borrowed money. They're not using cash flow, but they were using both their cash flow and borrowing to buy back their shares. And they said it's going to hit $1 trillion this year, but that's slowing down from last year. So they reckon it's actually running out of steam. They're running out of ability because, you know, over the past 5 to 8 years, they said it's been almost entirely share buybacks that have driven the stock prices higher. So they are engineering their own stock price rises, but thus doing that, they're also undermining their future growth because they're buying back shares rather than investing in their own growth, future growth. So they're not investing in their own company; they're just investing in their shares.
Oh.
And therefore, it's going to turn over in a very vicious way because at least when the 2007, 2008, and 2009 crisis hit, you know, there was some residue and leftover of previous investment cycles. So now we haven't had any investment in the U.S. economy, any, for the past 8 years. There's only been investment in shares.
Right. Well, you have the global investment community, which runs trillions of dollars looking for stocks to buy. They do it through statistical analysis, and they look at things like price-earnings ratios, and they look at the historical price-earnings ratio, that is the price of a stock versus the earnings that the company is making. And historically, the stock market might trade between, let's say, 10 and 20 times earnings. So over the past 10, 15, 20 years, earnings have been going down for these big companies because of the inability in a globalized market to eke out any meaningful gains because everything has been shifting overseas to Asia and we have the forces of globalization. So to make it look like the company is trading at 10 or 12 times earnings instead of 25, 30, 45, 50 times earnings, which would indicate that the price is way overvalued, they manipulate the earnings number by reducing the number of shares in the in the divisor, in the numerator, I guess.
Yeah.
So if you are a company that has 100 million shares outstanding, if you buy back 10 or 15 or 20 million shares, then you've just increased, the price to earnings ratio has been cosmetically altered to look a considerable better. And these pools of passive money and pension funds and various other groups, they look at just the PE ratio and they buy that stock, and which is good for the people who bought back the stock because they have options tied to the price of the stock. And when the options go up, they cash out. And it's a huge manipulation of markets. And there's fewer and fewer stocks around. I mean, you look at this $80 billion deal just announced. AT&T is buying Time Warner. So that's the whole market's being taken private. That's $80 billion that they, the financing of the deal, their cost of financing is effectively zero because they can borrow money wholesale from the central banking system itself at near zero. So why wouldn't you buy for $80 billion an income-producing asset like Time Warner if your cost of funding that deal is zero? Of course you would. But why can't I do it? Why is it only available to a few crooks?
But also that they then have pricing power through limited competition, because we were actually going through the options for internet service here for Max's mom's house, and there are three providers. And then we were literally discussing it when I said, oh my God, I just saw through the Twitter stream that two of the providers available, AT&T and Time Warner, are going to merge. Right. So there will actually only be two rather than three. So there's less and less competition everywhere you go. Now we just started talking about the absence of any competition for these so-called marketplaces. Can you really call it a marketplace when there's one seller?
No, it's the Soviet Union. Again, it's ironic that Russia's being pilloried these days because America's becoming Soviet Union-esque and this complete collapse of competition and free markets and the rise of the oligarchs and the state. I mean, the state is through... Hillary Clinton's a great example. She's a Russian oligarch, essentially. She's the state-sponsored, state media. We also learned from the Podesta emails that the media, the journalists in America, the ones that are seen on television, are the ones that parrot the line coming directly from the government. So that's a state-run media. It's not in the same way as Al Jazeera English or RT or Press TV, but it's done through an intermediary called the media, which is portrayed as being connected somehow to the free speech rights. But now, through the Podesta reveals via WikiLeaks, we know that the journalists are parroting the script that is provided to them by the government and the corporate collusion.
Yes, if you haven't read any of this stuff, and I know you might not because the mainstream media, the likes of The Guardian, Telegraph, Independent, and whatnot, are kind of not covering it. But the fact is the Podesta emails show very clearly that they knew they could guarantee... They basically wrote headlines. They had headlines changed. They wrote headlines for allegedly, free-speaking, independent journalists, independent-minded journalists at basically like the Washington Post, New York Times, Daily Beast, Politico, BuzzFeed. They wrote, Podesta actually wrote headlines. He and Nanny Tandon, another person from Hillary's staff, and they wrote the headlines, they wrote the content, and they said, here, go to Ezra Klein. He was identified as the most compliant and would do whatever they want. So he was their propaganda guy. He was their Baghdad Bob.
Yeah, so naturally, in this election, you have the expose of Hillary Clinton and all of her connections to corruption, which would normally be a negative, but she's running against Donald Trump, who is a neophyte. You could put a 12th grader from your local middle school up there running for president, and they would have as much experience as Donald Trump in politics and in presidential politics. I think he's sincere in that he wishes to bring about a more, he always talking about trade deals and a more competitive environment for U.S., better for workers and things. That's true, and I'm sure he's very sincere in that. But unfortunately, his experience is completely zero. I mean, we saw that in the debates.
Yeah, well, I was going to bring up the debates because the final debate was just a few nights ago, and I was surprised that, of course, the perception on Twitter, it's really hard to gauge because it's mostly those Ezra Klein sort of people. And, they're always like, "Wahoo! Hillary won! Hillary kicking butt!" But then, again, like the area that we're in, Chapel Hill, it's all sophisticated, successful, wealthy people, more Democratic voters here than Republican. And yet when we went into the coffee shop that we go every day, every single person, not one single person said Hillary won the debate. We asked, "Oh, what did you think of the debates last night?" I didn't, present either way that I thought either candidate was better than the other. And every single one said the same thing of the six people I asked. Every single one said, "I can't stand Hillary." That was their assessment of the debate. I was surprised about that. So, I thought people would just laugh at how awful Trump is at debates and articulating ideas.
Yeah, it's a shame that we don't have a better pool of candidates to choose from. I mean, the whole Clinton dynasty should have died 10 years ago. I mean, that's it. Why is it still kicking? It's such based in such a scandalous, fraudulent, corrupt past. We should not be putting another one in the White House. I mean, this is a terrible choice. Donald Trump has no experience whatsoever. So, you know, the outcome of this, I would anticipate that, like the last time, I mean, during the Obama interregnum between Obama and Bush, there was a huge market crash. And during the chaos, a lot of people got rich. I would imagine that it's a great time to have a big market chaos between November and January to cash in on the who's running who's doing what scenario. Seems like we're ripe for one.
Yeah, well, that was the Bloomberg article talking about all these share buybacks. As they're saying, the share buybacks, the ability to do that is they're losing steam because there's been six quarters in a row now with declining earnings, meaning they have less money to buy back shares in the first place. And yet they're still trying to maintain. They're maintaining that 2015 high. And therefore, you know, they're running out of steam because they're plateauing. They're not increasing. But they're doing that against a backdrop of declining earnings because their earnings, as I said, would eventually have to collapse due to the fact that they weren't investing. So it's what Bloomberg was suggesting, the Bloomberg News article was suggesting, was that, yes, we're due for quite a mega collapse, because if it's only been companies buying back their own shares sustaining this stock rally for the past 8 years, then who's going to buy? And yeah, we only have 2 minutes left.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the focus here is on this data point called earnings. Mm-hmm. And earnings have been manipulated through buybacks, as we've discussed. They've also been manipulated through accounting fraud. You know, the big four accounting companies are responsible for auditing the books of all the S&P 500 companies. And I don't think there's a single instance where their work has proven to be without corruption of some type. Mm-hmm. Okay, there's every single day there's a new reveal that they have cooked the books of yet another huge company or country. So that earnings number is fake, and it's fake. So there's another dimension to why that earnings number is fake. And so it's in a number that is can suddenly, like in the case of Enron, you know, the company is worth $80 billion, and they said, wait a minute, the earnings are not what the company says they are. The earnings are actually closer to zero. And the stock went to zero, and $80 billion was wiped out. A couple people went to jail, and that's what we're looking at.
Well, with a President Clinton, President Hillary Clinton, of course, we know exactly how this is going to play out. We know what's going to happen. You're going to have fewer and fewer players. You're going to have, like, J.P. Morgan, Goldman Sachs will become a bank, one big bank. Citigroup and Bank of America will merge. And you'll have that's what will happen. That's what you're going to see this next crash around. Yeah. So with that, I think it's time to say goodbye, y'all.
All right, y'all. Goodbye, y'all.